You're listening to SpursCast, episode 586. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the SpursCast. Today, I'll be joined by Project Spurs founder, Michael DeLeon. In this episode, Mike and I will discuss the latest developments for next season, free agency approaching, and a DeMar DeRozan offseason rumor. Well, it's been a really long time since there's been a SpursCast episode. Mike, how are you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. It's a lot colder than last time we did a SpursCast episode, but I'm doing pretty good. I'm ready for like all the like holidays coming up and stuff like that, and finally ready for some. I go in between back and forth. I'm like, I'm kind of ready for stuff to start, but then I know once it starts, it's not going to stop. You know, with basketball again, so it's one of those things. I'm not sure I'm quite ready, but we'll see.
I'll be honest with you. I'm actually not. I mean, I'm excited for like the off season stuff, but I'm not really ready to start basketball again. And the reason why is because you know that we have Analyzing the League over on Project Spurs Network. So SpursCast listeners, if you all have been to analyzingtheleague.com, you'll know that we covered the whole playoffs, not just the Spurs when they got knocked out in the bubble play, but also all the way up until the finals. We had some databases going. So like honestly, Mike, like I was actually getting tired of watching basketball every single day, and like you know that was game. It was like four games in a day for the playoffs, and then finally the finals came. It was just a lot. I know that because of the pandemic we had been waiting for some basketball because it, you know, we had all those months off. But after it came, that August to October nonstop covering it, I'm kind of like, I need like, I'm just over any kind of sport. I don't watch baseball right now. I don't watch any football. Just nothing. I'm just like away from sports right now, trying to recharge my brain. And now that we see it, and that's why you know there hasn't been a SpursCast episode in almost 2 months. And again, we just need that break. There hasn't been anything on the Spurs' end. But now you know the NBA is starting to come back, and they're starting to get their plans together for next season as they're coming together. So SpursCast listeners, that's what we're gonna do here. Let's go ahead and jump right into this. Let's begin with the first topic, which is about the latest developments for next season. So a lot of this information comes from ESPN, The Athletic, and also the New York Times. Mark Stein are the three outlets that I got a lot of this information from. So, Mike, so some main takeaways from what's getting reported right now. The NBA is targeting a pre-Christmas date of December 22nd to restart next season. Or to begin next season, should I say, brand new. It's going to be a shorter season, which will be 72-game season, losing about 10 games off the calendar if it happens. And likely because of the situation, you know, in different states where the teams are located, they want to start without fans. And because of what we can see nationwide, what's going on with the pandemic, it's getting a little bit worse right now. We're starting to see a surge nationwide. They're probably not going to have any fans to start the year in arenas. They are, because they're losing 10 games in the season, they do want to keep that play-in tournament. So that's something that did very well for them in the bubble, and that was a lot of fun to watch, especially if you were a Spurs fan. You know, to see the Spurs go, I think it was like 6-2 or 5-3, whatever their record was, they did very well. And you saw the teams like the Phoenix Suns who went 8-0, so that was a lot of fun. So they want to keep that type of format in this new season coming up. But because of that, and because of the shortened season, they're going to have to most likely get rid of the All-Star break, so we probably won't have an All-Star break. The teams will get a two-week break most likely in the middle of the season at some point, just to let the players and the teams, you know, rest and follow that through. Then the NBA does want to get back to a more normal calendar, NBA calendar. So what they want to do is try to get the finals finished up pretty quickly in the summer. That way, if any star players want to go play with in the Olympics with Team USA, if they make the roster, they would go to Japan next summer to be able to participate. And also, there's a lot of international players that applies to as well. So if they can get back to the summer months, they would be able to have their normal off season with, like, you know, the free agency and all that stuff in the summer months. And then, you know, they would hopefully start back in October the following year of 2021 for the following season. The draft is approaching within the next few weeks on November 18th. That is secure. That's a very secure date that's going to happen on November 18th. There isn't a free agency date yet, but we're going to talk about in our second topic some rumors that are out there about when that's going to begin. And then there's a rumor that maybe if they agree to a December 22nd season, then training camps could begin as quickly as December 1st. And then the last thing is that the schedule that's being developed right now is that they're trying to make a priority stay within markets. So like let's say you have a game against the Knicks. Well, then if you're going to play the Knicks, they want you to play the Nets as well, since you're already in the New York area. So they're trying to figure out the calendar, how that's going to work, and that's kind of what they want to do, is keep it like more regional-based in the areas that multiple teams are located. And then lastly, this reporting is just coming off a meeting between the Board of Governors. So that's all the NBA team owners that met together on Friday last week. And now, remember, if they do get anything on paper, they have to get an agreement with the NBA Players Association. So both sides have to mutually agree in order to restart a new season. So, Mike, I know that's a lot of information. What are your thoughts about basketball returning?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, we've talked about when it could possibly come back, but then when you see draft coming back as soon as, you know, a few weeks away, it's just like, okay, yeah, that's coming pretty quickly. And then pre-Christmas Day start, I mean, that's all just around the corner. I like the idea of a 72-game season. I think that's good. I think the no fans thing is I think that's important. And I think the bubble in Orlando proved that, you know, you could still have, like, entertaining games without having fans there. And obviously you want to stay safe, because I feel like the NBA has done the best job of the major leagues. You know, we saw MLB have a lot of cases, and then NFL lately we've seen more and more in the NBA. While they're there, I don't think they reported ever like one positive result. So I think that's the way to go. That's really good. I mean, it's going to be kind of strange to see. You know, obviously some of these, this time, like, crunch or whatever, and it just seems like, I don't know what that leaves as far as, like, time for bodies to heal up and stuff like that. And I mean, people, especially teams that played in the finals or deep playoffs, that's a quick turnaround. They're usually not used to that, so there's not going to be any kind of long, I mean, there's, you can't really go to, and enjoy a long vacation anyway, but there's not a lot of time for that. But at least that 2-week break is going to be good. Yeah, the thing about the scheduling, I mean, I just think that's just smart. Obviously, I mean, I feel like having it in one place, I mean, they had to do a lot of scheduling things, and the scheduling didn't always work out because, you know, there were games during the day and stuff like that. But if they can do that and be smart about it and make sure that teams kind of try to stay in the same areas and aren't traveling like coast to coast, then that definitely helps. So it's definitely a lot, but they're, you know, it looks like they're making some good decisions so far. And I'm also a fan of the whole play-in tournament. I feel like that really changed things, because usually the end of the season is kind of, you know, teams start resting, especially at the top, resting players, the games aren't as important. But for, like, when you have a play-in and you have, like, you know, you can have, like, four teams, you know, at the bottom of the West or East that are really jockeying for position, that play-in tournament was really important. And even though, like, Phoenix, you know, was undefeated, I mean, they still couldn't get in. So, anyway, it's just definitely an interesting twist that I like. So it'll be cool to see that another year.
Yeah, and I think one thing that you noted there with the play-in tournament was that we did see that, like, a lot of teams didn't want to tank. You know, we saw teams like the Spurs, like Phoenix, you know, the Grizzlies too could keep they were trying to keep their slot as well. Where, like, you know, they knew that if they got into the playoffs, they would have lost their, you know, they would have fallen back in the draft order. They could have got basically a worse pick, but they were still going for it. Phoenix was going for it. San Antonio was going for it. These teams were actually trying to get into the playoffs, and I think that's the cool thing, is that you're not going to see as much tanking in a season, even if teams start off pretty bad to start the year. Because again, they have that play-in tournament to look forward to if they can stay within a certain number of games, and I like the way the NBA approached that, of saying, you know, if you're within six games, you qualify for that. And there's something else you brought up that's very important, Mike, is the fact that, like, some teams are in different places right now. You know, we have the teams from the lottery that didn't play at all in the restart, so like Golden State, you know, Atlanta, some of those teams that stayed behind since March, they haven't played basketball, you know, organized basketball. I know that they did some like in town types of like training camps for those teams, but again, it's not the same thing as real games like these other teams got to play in the bubble environment. And I think that, like you mentioned, like the teams that went to the finals or went to the conference finals, those teams are going to be a little bit more exhausted to have to, if they come to an agreement on December 1st, to have to resume the season. So again, Spurscast listeners, we'll basically follow, you know, the reporting of what's going on there in terms of, remember, there has to be a mutual agreement between the NBAPA, the Players Association, plus the Board of Governors. So both sides have to agree in order for there to be an actual deal to come through on terms of when next season will start. The next topic I want to discuss, Mike, is free agency is approaching. There's been no hard date set just yet, but it could be, what we're hearing most is that it's going to be right after the draft, pretty quickly, a few days after. So the draft is on November 18th. I know Mark Stein of the New York Times reported that it could be as early as November 21st or 22nd. I heard Bobby Marks from ESPN.com report on a podcast that it could be, you know, November 22nd or 23rd. I think the best way to understand this, Sportscast, is that Thanksgiving week is most likely going to be free agency. It's going to be like July for free agency, but instead we're gonna be doing that during Thanksgiving week. So that'll be, get ready, you know, have some time ready, and that's good that it's coming during the holidays, so you know, most of us should be at home and stuff, so So be ready for that. It'll be kind of fun. Just Thanksgiving week, instead we're doing all the trades and the free agency signings and where's the rumors coming from. So that's kind of what it looks like right now. Once the deadline is set for free agency, all the offseason dates do kick in. So for the Spurs perspective, there's some very important dates once they actually do get a date. For the first thing is DeMar DeRozan, who has that $27 million player option. He would have about 5 days before the free agency date begins to decide whether or not he's going to jump into the deal or decline it and become an unrestricted free agent. So there's a big option for DeMar. Players like that can become restricted free agents, like Jakob Poeltl, Quindary Weatherspoon, Drew Eubanks. The Spurs would have to tender them a qualifying offer to make them restricted free agents by the day before the free agency date gets set. So that's about, again, Thanksgiving week, most likely. Also, the Spurs have to figure out what they want to do in terms of if they want to waive Trey Lyles or keep him on the roster for next season. Again, that date has to come in right before the free agency date. And then there's also some players who most likely their deadlines would be in mid-December for guys that are on non-guaranteed contracts, like Chimezie Metu and Tyler Zeller, where their dates are a little bit further. So they're going to probably be in about mid-December. Also, Derek White, even though he's not a free agent, the Spurs can extend him beginning on that free agency. So again, we might see Derek White get an extension if the Spurs and his camp would like to continue working together long term as a partnership. So Mike, I know those are just some things, just some early things that it's going on with the free agency. What do you think about that?
So this is one of the things that I like about a compressed offseason is the free agency period. These guys are going to have to make decisions quick. You kind of wonder if it was this kind of situation, if the whole Marcus Morris thing would have happened, if it was this offseason instead, would he have had the time to do that? Not only that, but last offseason, I mean, everybody was waiting for Kawhi. That was the one piece that needed to, they need to find out where he was going, and then everything else fell in place. You really don't have a lot of time to make that happen, so players are going to have to, probably already be thinking hard about, who they want to play for and making decisions as far as, I think, especially in the Drill situation is, what's best for them. In his case, I think obviously opting in is, and I think a lot of other players that maybe might have opted out might be willing to play another year, somewhere, just so that they can secure whatever contracts, they have in place instead of taking a gamble on the free agency and the market, whatever their market value is at that time. So that part's going to be interesting. Obviously, the Spurs will have some decisions to make. I think the whole I really don't see Chimezie Metu or Zeller coming back, really. Mm-hmm. The whole, Poeltl, I know we're going to talk about that some more, but that thing is going to be, that's going to be really interesting, I think, because the Spurs have not spent a lot on big money for, when it's some player has an offer to, make a certain amount, they have not been too willing to sign those players. I mean, Baines is one example, but Bonds is another example. They're they give them a chance to go and earn their money, so Poeltl is going to be interesting now that he's played 2 years and what they see in him. So, a lot of pieces are going to have to fall really quickly. So I think I'm going to enjoy watching that. And I'm sure Thanksgiving week when everybody's sitting at home and phones are going to be going crazy. So that'll be an interesting way to ring in that holiday.
Yeah, for sure. For me, just being at home, it's gonna be fun just to be involved with free agency and be able to see all the rumors and things like that. So we'll definitely cover it here at Project Spurs. With free agency approaching, Mike, we're starting to see some salary projections coming out for these Spurs free agents, like you mentioned. And so one article that recently came out was by Bobby Marks on ESPN Plus, where he provided some starting salaries for the Spurs players, free agents, and where they kind of project to be if they signed a multi-year deal. So I wrote a piece on Project Spurs called the React, and it's about these salary pieces. So if you want to read that over on Project Stores, make sure you check that out. But I just want to quickly go through this a little bit, Mike, with you. So we start off with DeMar DeRozan. His starting salary should be about $22 to $24 million. Again, as I mentioned, the only two ways he gets that money is if he re-signs with the Spurs, if he declines his player option and then signs with another team that has cap space, that $22 to $24 million, but there could be only maybe four teams that have that amount of cap space. And then the third option for him would be to to decline his option with the Spurs, but then re-sign with the Spurs and then seek a trade, so sign a trade deal with the team that's over the cap. What do you think about this number for DeRozan at about 22 to 24 million?
I mean, that seems like, obviously, you know, it's the number's going to go down, or, you know, the salary cap. So I think that's pretty accurate, because then like his current option is like somewhere around 27. So yeah, I can definitely see that going down. And that's why I think he opts in, just because, I mean, you know, it's not a drastic difference, but to a player, you know, I'm sure, you know, it makes some difference for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he's going to end up opting into that $27 million. And then when we get to our third topic, we'll see there's going to be some routes he can take if he does opt in terms of where you know, continuing playing with San Antonio. The next player is Bryn Forbes. His starting salary on a multi-year deal was projected to be about $4 to $6 million. So it's a little bit north of the veteran minimum. What do you think about Forbes, Mike? You know, the case here for him is that the Spurs can re-sign him in two ways if they did want to re-sign him. We don't know that. We don't have any reporting right now that says that they want to bring him back. So the two ways are, one, they could just use his bird rights to re-sign him, sign him over the cap, or two, they could offer him part of their mid-level exception, which they should have the full mid-level exception if most of their offseason moves go according to plan. And just remember about Forbes, Spurs cast listeners, you know, he played for the bulk of the season prior to the pandemic. He was a starting shooting guard, but then, as we saw in the bubble, there was an injury for him, but then really he never really played in the bubble due to that injury. But again, we don't know if he would have gotten those minutes had he been healthy, because again, Lonnie Walker's getting a lot of minutes. We saw Keldon Johnson really emerge, and then also Derek White started next to DeJounte Murray in the backcourt, should I say. So what do you think about that number for Forbes, Mike, at $4 to $6 million?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, Bryn Forbes has been, like, criminally underpaid for what he's done the past couple of years, and I still feel like, I know that most of the fan base would be fine with him not being back, but when you start to try to fill out a roster, and I was just talking to someone on Twitter earlier, and they're talking about, okay, this is what the Spurs need, and they also probably need to get a shooter. I'm just like, okay, well, but are you going to find another shooter in this range? You know, why not just stick with the guy that you've already got, and you can go over the cap to sign, because then it becomes about, you know, like you said, they've got to use part of the, you know, the mid-level, or they've got to find another way to sign a free agent. I feel like, you know, that's still a pretty good value for him and what he does. I mean, you know, obviously, I think that starting, he might not come back and start, but off the bench as a shooter, I think that's fine, you know. So, but again, I think for as far as it's gonna depend a lot on, obviously, DeMar and then Jakob, and then once those two pieces, you know, are they have some sort of a decision on those two, then they can move, and that would probably affect Bryn Forbes' you know, wherever he's gonna go or if he's gonna stay after that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, his shooting does reflect why he would probably get his market would be a little bit more than the veteran minimum, is the fact that, you know, he is a known shooter in the market that teams know about, you know, and the Spurs know about, obviously, you know, despite his deficiencies on defense. And so that is something they got to look at, you know, because if they let him walk, well, then they had the ability to re-sign him using his bird rights. And so that's something that we got to watch, even though it looked like, you know, had he been healthy, I don't know if he would have been that big part of the rotation in the restart, as we saw. So let's kind of see what happens with Bryn Forbes. Next player, Marco Bellinelli. His, you know, veteran player now. He's been at the league, I think, 13 years. His projected market is at about the veteran minimum or a little bit north of it. So 2 to 4 million is the range. You know, with the Spurs, we saw that he was basically starting to lose his minutes and his role. You know, he was constantly, before the pandemic, he was always like jostling with Lonnie Walker IV to see who would get those backup minutes off the bench at the three or the two. And then, as we saw in the bubble, he and like Lonnie and then also Keldon Johnson, those two players, the younger players, were obviously put ahead of him in the rotation. So what do you think about Marco's market right here from 2 to 4 million?
Yeah, I mean, I think Marco's probably a minimum player for the rest of his career. You know, I think his last contract, I think he signed part of the mid-level with the Spurs. So I think that, you know, that was like his last, or, you know, at least at that level, I think minimum's right where he should be. But again, before the bubble, you know, I would have said, okay, I'll probably think about keeping him around. Now, since it seems like some of the younger guys, they give them some minutes, and they did pretty well, you know, that, yeah, you're starting to see, well, is there a logjam there? And so I'm not sure, you know, I think that he might be one player that may not make it back next season.
I agree too, and I think that maybe if he did try to get that $4 million, I think that maybe like a playoff team, a team that needs a shooter off the bench, maybe they would be that'd be the kind of team that maybe gives them a little bit of their mid level exception or whatever kind of exception they have. I think maybe to get him a little bit north of the veteran minimum. But I agree with you. I don't see him coming back to the Spurs right as of right now. The next player, that Spurs, like you mentioned earlier about this player, Jakob Poeltl, his range is kind of where we were projecting, which is about that full mid level range. So it's about 8 to 10 million, which is basically the mid level is about 9.3. So that's exactly where the Spurs can offer him either their mid level or they can use his bird rights to re-sign him. But again, they can make him restricted free agent, which means that he could go seek a deal from another team. And if he gets that deal, well, then the Spurs would have 48 hours to match that deal. It doesn't look, because of this market range, it doesn't look like the Spurs would get outbid by anyone. They would basically just, they would be up to them whether or not they want to match that 3-year offer from an offer sheet. And so I think that you were bringing up some really interesting points about bringing back Jakob, is the fact that, like, you know, one thing they have to consider is this going to be their starting feature for the next few years? Because that 8 to 10 million, whatever he signs for, that's going to take up some of the cap for the next 4 years or 3 years, whatever the deal would be for. And again, they're going to be a team that's going to have a lot of cap space in 2020, the next offseason, not this coming offseason, 21, 22. And that's going to be a chunk of that cap space that's gone if Jakob's back. And so again, he's a really, he's a good center. He started playing really well in the bubble, but we know that when LaMarcus Aldridge is healthy, there's going to be some jostling there for those minutes between who's going to play at the five the majority of the minutes. And Aldridge is a veteran who's on the last year of his deal. And so if they want to make Jakob maybe the big of the future, well, then they would have to make a decision with Aldridge. So that's something also to keep in mind. What do you think about Jakob's number here at 8 to 10 million?
I feel like that's fair just because of what, you know, the production they've gotten out of him, especially like you said, in the bubble. It looked like it's almost kind of like since he was, you know, he played more at that five and wasn't sharing the front court, it's almost like it was kind of like a more natural fit for him or something. So I like that range. I think if it gets to be more than that, that's when the Spurs might say, okay, you know, then they might have to, but again, no matter what they do, I mean, they're still, it's not like they can just go sign any, you know, free agent at that same value. I mean, that's the thing about, you know, being able to sign your own free agents and using their bird rights, things like that. So I think, I mean, unless it gets like really high end a team, but like it's like you said, I can't see a team really going too much farther north of that because they're all, you know, obviously everybody's budgets are going to be a little more constricted.
Yeah, for sure. And then the last two players, Mike, who will be entering free agency are both of the Spurs as G League players, or two-way players, should I say. Quindary Weatherspoon and Drew Eubanks. Now, Bobby Marks hasn't mentioned this, that, you know, their salary range, but they are below the minimum. And then also on winsadded.com, their player projection tool, they're projected to get about the minimum. So I think that's a good sign for the Spurs because, again, they can make both of these players, Weatherspoon and Eubanks, restricted free agents, which means they would have to go out and find better deals from another team. Or if not, they could just, take that qualifying offer and remain with the Spurs. So what do you think about their range for Weatherspoon and Eubanks?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good, and I really can't see there being enough tape on these guys, really, for them to get anything that's going to be outside of this first range. If they're able to get, you know, Eubanks back at the minimum, I think, I mean, that's like a no-brainer because he played so much better in Orlando than he had done all season, and I feel like his play kind of made Metu expendable, because he just seemed to be able to grasp things better and play within the offense a little better and was able to do just kind of like the easy stuff, and just seems like he had a better grasp overall. I mean, also, this was really like the first time we had really seen him play any decent minutes, and some of what I think we saw was you know, it was enough to warrant keeping him around, especially if they're able to get him at that, you know, keep him at that range.
Yeah, for sure. So again, Spurscast listeners, again, this piece, if you want to read the projections, it's over on Project Spurs called The React, and it's called Starting Salary Projections. Just check it out again, and then I just basically give some context to those projections that Bobby Marks provided in that piece, and just kind of the ways that the Spurs could re-sign these players or let them walk. The last topic, Mike, we're finally approaching here is Just one that we know that's off season time. When I get this, when this is how I learned about this topic. I had a friend, come out to me and tell me, you know, hey, is it true about DeRozan? Is he really unhappy? And I'm like, what? I start looking, and of course, you know, on Twitter, and there's this quote by DeMar DeRozan that he doesn't like being in San Antonio. Some agent said that. I was like, what is going on here? So then, I started talking to you, Mike. Me and you start texting, and we're like, what's going on here? So we knew that we found out it's from The Athletic. So then, of course, I actually had to read the full story. So what happened here? Let me get some context here. So how this rumor came about DeRozan? I think it was last week. So the way it happened was the Athletic wrote this piece where they talked to 20 anonymous NBA agents. Okay, so NBA agents, 20 of them, and all their answers were for anonymous. They didn't want to be put on the record. These agents for their responses. So then these agents were given a bunch of different questions. I think it was about 12 different questions, and so they were asked to just about different things about the offseason and how it's approaching it, certain players that are going to be entering free agency. Well, anyway, one of the questions that gets asked is, who's one of the highest profile players that you expect to change teams? And then DeRozan did get a vote from one of the agents. I think 0.5 votes was the number in the piece. Okay, and then one agent, again, just one agent, anonymous agent, said this quote to the writer or the writers, whoever wrote this for The Athletic: DeMar doesn't like San Antonio and doesn't want to be there. So that was it. Just that one sentence got, just made headlines in Spurs Twitter. And so that's how it obviously got to me at some point last week. And so then that one rumor did come out, and even DeMar, I guess it got some headlines because DeMar even had to address it, where he refuted it on Instagram, according to our Project Spurs writer, Josh Paredes. He put it, I don't have Instagram, so Josh has Instagram, so he says that DeMar did refute that. He put some Instagram post about it that same day that it came out. So I just want to, again, it's this quote is coming from one agent. I just want to look at both sides of this rumor. Let's first take it. Let's just say that DeMar wasn't happy in San Antonio. He doesn't like being there. So think about it from his perspective. He is a veteran. He's probably trying to get as far as he can in the playoffs. And we've seen that the Spurs have slowly started to transition with the veteran squad toward a more youth movement. We saw that in the bubble with Keldon Johnson getting a lot of minutes, DeJounte Murray, Derek White, Jakob Poeltl. A lot of these young guys started to get some minutes. Lonnie Walker IV. So maybe he doesn't like where his role's at, where they're trying to give the keys a little bit to the younger guys as well, while still trying to keep some of the veteran core players. So there could be some truth to that maybe he doesn't like his role or the situation that he's in. But the other side of it is that, man, there's, like you mentioned, Mike, earlier, there's $27 million on the table here for him to decide on. If he really doesn't like being a Spur, well, then he could just make that choice, before free agency starts, to just declining the player option, and he can sign wherever he wants. But again, there's $27 million there that he has to decide on. If he wants to stay, well, then he could opt in. And then if he still doesn't like being a Spur, well, then he could ask for a trade, and that's the way that they could look at moving him to a team that had interest. But again, we don't know if it's true. This is DeRozan did kind of refute it with his Instagram post. So what did you make of this rumor, Mike?
Yeah, the extra trouble with anything like attributed to an anonymous source is that obviously you can't hold them accountable for what they say. And so people kind of really just say whatever they want. And that's why, if anybody ever says something, I've had people try to tell me something that they know somebody that knows somebody that said something, and I'm just like, no, I'm not going to publish that, because it's anonymous, unless they want to first, obviously, it's got to be, have to be somebody with credibility. Second of all, I'm not going to publish anything about the anonymous source. So, but that's the nature of the beast, I guess, with the NBA and everything. And when you have bigger names and bigger stories out there, a lot of times you have to, some publications have to publish things like this. But to me, it just seems like, so like with Kawhi, that whole thing, the writing was kind of on the wall. There was some stuff going on, obviously with the things being said, and with the whole kind of hiding out in New York kind of thing. There was something there. It was kind of like what I said at the time of where there's smoke, there's fire. DeMar is, it's just so opposite of anything he's ever said about the city and the fan base, and so it just seems so far-fetched to me. I mean, it could be how he feels, but he hasn't made that apparent in any way. And the trouble with this, something like this, is people start taking it as fact, and they start, the whole news cycle starts on, and then people start reacting based on what somebody else said, even though DeMar did refute it on Instagram, like, pretty much directly after it starts becoming, like kind of fact. And so that's always, like, troublesome, just because a lot of people are, like, making up their own narratives and everything. And everybody was like, well, it's a, you know, obviously, you know, I can see how he feels that way because the Spurs misused him. And I was talking to people, and they were talking about his you know, where he played. And I'm just like, most players aren't going to care. You know, he had to play some 3 and 4. I doubt that's enough to, like, say he doesn't want to be there, because he had to play some 3 and 4 in the bubble. So it just seems so weird. It seems like he's been appreciative of kind of the support he's gotten in San Antonio. He's talked about being excited to play with, like, Keldon Johnson and some of the younger guys that he got to play in the bubble. So that's why it's just, it's so weird. It just seemed like kind of like out of left field on this one, because I just haven't seen anything. And then, you know, obviously he's going to have to, he would have to leave some money on the table to be able to do this. And I can understand where players start getting older and they might want to make that run. But, you know, it's hard to take anything serious when there's never been any other kind of signs before.
Yeah, and I think one thing that piece mentioned, the Athletic piece, of, you know, if you read the whole thing, was that, like, a lot of the players with player options north of $20 million, they're not going to take a chance this offseason, in the middle of a pandemic, with the NBA expected to lose a lot of money from what happened in the loss of revenue. I don't think that any players are actually going to be declining a lot of these big player options. I think Andre Drummond's a player who already said verbally that he's going to accept his player option or not decline it. And then I think DeRozan's probably going to be in that same position. Again, you know, if these rumors are true, DeRozan has all the power right now to make that decision, because he does have the player option to decide on. It's his choice right now. Now, if he opts in, and then he's, like I mentioned, if he's still not happy, well, then he can start talking to his agent, and they can start talking to Spurs about, let's see if there's any trade possibilities. But again, right now, you know, the control is in his hands in terms of what he wants to do with that player option. That's the first, you know, kind of domino that needs to fall in terms of what's going to happen. So again, you know, right now, at the end of the day, I remember also, I think it was before the pandemic started, wasn't there like a clip on TV or like where a reporter said that DeRozan was thinking about declining his player option or something like that, and then yeah. DeRozan kind of refuted that night of the game. He like said something like he's like said, yeah. You know, yeah. So he's actually always comes out whenever these rumors come out, and he will refute them. So again, it's up to him and his agent. You know, what are they seeing? You know, do they like being in San Antonio? Does he like being in San Antonio? What are they looking at in terms of, is there a market for him if he were to decline the player option? Are there teams with cap space that might want to sign him, or are there teams that maybe are over the cap that have interest in him, that maybe if he declined his player option, maybe he could get the Spurs and that team to work out a sign and trade deal? So there are some possibilities, but again, you know, we kind of just got to wait on time here to find out what's going to happen. And again, what he and his agent are kind of looking at the landscape in terms of, do they want to remain with San Antonio for another year under that $27 million, or look for other options in terms of getting moved. So we'll basically see with time here what's going to happen. Again, that first domino, that first date to fall, will be his player option that he does need to decide on whether or not he's going to pick it up, or if he's going to decline it and to become an unrestricted free agent. Because then at that point, well, then he can just leave to any team that he wants to. So we'll kind of see what happens. But again, make sure, like, whenever these kind of rumors come out, make sure that you just read the whole piece that it came from, the original source, and just kind of get the you know, find out the full context of what these rumors have in detail. All right, so thank you, SpursCast listeners, for joining us here on the SpursCast episode 568. Just a few quick promotions before we head out of this episode. Make sure you're checking productspurs.com. We are starting to ramp things up over there now that the draft's coming, now that offseason's about to begin here with free agency, and then next season's coming pretty quickly. One of the latest pieces by Jonas Clark is called "Is 2021 a Make or Break Year for Lucas Samanich?" I also had a piece on an update on the Spurs' offseason, so make sure you check that out. And then also Benjamin Bornstein had a piece just looking at some options the Spurs could look at in terms of the draft if they were to make a trade, any kind of potential trade with Boston, if they were to try to make a trade with the Celtics. Well, then Ben looks at some prospects they could maybe take with the with any picks that the Celtics were to trade to the Spurs. But again, that's just something Ben's just kind of pondering and looking at it in a scenario. So thanks again to Mike for joining me here on SpursCast, on this SpursCast episode, and also for producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.